You know you rock when you roll with the Seahawks. Marshawn Lynch, beast mode with his dreadlocks. Rolls and passes the ball to the end.
Oh my goodness gracious, is it that time of year again?
The song, it really does something for me, man.
Yeah, man, this is the lived in bars of sports raps.
That's right.
Really takes me back. Do we have to retire this song when there are literally no more Seahawks reference in it that play for the team, which means we got Wilson still. Wilson passes
right,
the ball.
Right, right.
And he's under contract for a long time, so we're still good for, I think, probably 5-6 years on this.
Yeah, I think that this song will outlive us, both as a show and potentially as human beings. So I think we're I actually think it just gets better and better. Like a fine wine, I think it gets better and better with every year.
I think, someday when the aliens come and find the burned out husk of this planet, somewhere there'll just be like an MP3 player playing this song and us talking over it about how disappointing. Really, honestly, I thought we were on our way this weekend to a triple thumping. So it started with the, by the way, welcome to the No Point Conversion. We're going to talk about sports for a little while. Although I will say we're putting, I think, a fair amount of time and energy and organization, I guess you could say, into McMillan Men, our other spinoff. So, like, I take notes, you take notes, Andrew. We're, like, you're putting together special audio, which just means this. If we had two children, aside from TBTL, if we had two children, one was McMillan Men and one was No Point Conversion. No Point Conversion is not getting any attention. McMillan Men has been acting up in school. We've got it on a whole behavioral plan. And over on the other side is No Point. Zero prep. I don't even know the scores of any of these games. I'm just going to talk emotionally about how I felt this weekend related to sports. And I hope people find that entertaining. I welcome you to do the same thing, Andrew. Going into the weekend, I was pretty excited because, one, the Huskies were playing Cal. The Huskies were number 14 in the nation. They're hosting Cal. I was excited to see Jacob Eason, their new quarterback, who put up some monster numbers the first week against Eastern Washington. And then rolling right into Cleveland Browns, Rollo Tony Browntown, and then the Seahawks. I was so excited. So then the Husky game gets delayed by 2.5 hours because of the lightning storm. And then they come back. And I was so tired. Remember, I was a little under the weather on Saturday when I went home. I was so tired that I didn't make it to the end of the game, which is like I never do that. Like I never go to sleep before a football game I'm watching is over. I could not stay awake, and I'm kind of glad I didn't, because they ended up losing a total heartbreaker where, according to Danny O'Neill, Chris Peterson, the Husky coach, did not manage the clock well at the end, which I feel like is an issue for Chris Peterson. I was really down on Chris Peterson the first season because I felt like his clock management was awful, even though he's clearly a bright guy. I came around on him because he has absolutely turned the program around, so he deserves credit for that. But I still think time management is an issue for him. And so I woke up the next morning and I was like, oh, well, let's see how much the Huskies won by. And it was like, Huskies can't hold on against Cal. And I was like, what the WT the F? So that sucked. And then I got up Sunday morning. I was like, okay, cool. Let's start off with Cleveland. I'm listening to the Browns game on Sirius Satellite Radio, Andrew. That's, I want you to know, I was there with you. And then that was not a great outcome. How are you feeling about that?
That was rough. I mean, I don't even know where to begin this damn sentence, let alone this show. But I will say that there is so much hype around the Browns in the offseason and going into it, and so much national hype. And also, you know, the Browns, like, kind of taking on a swagger that they hadn't earned yet in the offseason that really concerned me as a man who has zero self-confidence in myself and in my favorite football team. And I was worried about the hype getting a little bit ahead of the team, and it certainly it certainly kind of bore fruit, my concerns did, when they lost by 30 points at home at their home opener to the Tennessee Titans, who are not the Titans of football while still being the Titans of football. No offense to our Tennessee listeners. 43-13 is the final score. Now, I will say, and I don't, like you said, I don't have a bunch of notes as far as the blow-by-blow of this. The 43-13 doesn't really reflect the whole game, although I sort of feel like right. It's kind of a correction because it was an ugly, nasty game. But for most of the game, it was within 6 or 7 points. For most of it, it was like 12-6, I believe, for the majority of the game, with the Browns, you know, trailing, but with plenty of plenty of time for them to get ahead of it. But then things really started just falling off the rails in the final quarter as I think he threw his first pick in the final quarter, but certainly in the second half as Baker Mayfield tried to start doing too much and everything was happening. But the main story of the game was they just destroyed themselves out there. They had 18 penalties, many of which were personal fouls, people getting ejected.
A guy got kicked out for kicking someone in the head?
Our center. No. I'm sorry. Our left tackle, which is an incredibly important position on the line and was a huge concern for us ever since Joe Thomas left. And it seemed like we had now had a good left tackle. I can't think of his name off the top of my head. But then, you know, there was like a little pushing and shoving,
old,
but it's all
old kicky guy.
But it's always
that should have been a giveaway.
It seems like it's always the guys who, you know, kind of react. And so you could see like in this big pile, somebody pushed our boy down. And then as our boy goes down, he retaliates by kicking him in the helmet, kicking the other guy in the helmet. Well, like that's not going to stand. I mean, that's 15 yards and he gets ejected. Then the person who's our backup left tackle a few plays later, if that ends up getting injured. Now we're like, we basically don't have a left tackle. But aside from that, it was just like this one defensive drive, four plays in a row, defensive penalties that were personal fouls, people getting chippy and just handing over yard upon yard upon yard to the Titans, and then they go ahead and score. And it was just like so messy and so undisciplined and just such trash. It was just trashy football. It made me like, I mean, I didn't know what to expect going into this. I felt like there was too much hype, and I felt like people don't remember that the Browns will always find a way to Browns. The fact that Baker Mayfield left the game without being injured actually defied my expectations a bit. I just have a bad feeling about being cursed, and whenever you have anything good, you know, something bad is going to happen. But in this case, it wasn't some sort of magical event that led to the Browns' demise. It was 100% the Browns, who were just not ready. And I guess the last point I'll kind of make is I'm not the type of guy who immediately turns on coaches, or I try not to be, but I just honestly – listen, I know Greg Williams, who was the defensive coordinator and then the interim head coach for a big chunk of last year. Like, the team took on a different personality when he was the head coach, and I know he is a complete shitheel as a human being, but I just don't believe that you would have these types of discipline problems if he were still leading the team. And I never was completely comfortable with the rationale of choosing Freddie Kitchens because of his relationship with the quarterback, which seems to be the driving principle.
Yeah,
that's
the whole idea, is that he's kind of Baker Mayfield's guy. I heard them say on the Cleveland Browns broadcast, as Freddie Kitchens says, 100 yards equals 7 points. And I was like, I don't think that's how any of this works.
What?
Like, that's a quote from – that's apparently a Freddie Kitchens quote that he loves to say, 100 yards equals 7 points. And I was like,
no.
I don't – that you could get 50 – you could get 40 yards and 40 yards and 20 yards, and it could be 100 yards, and that none of those could equal 7 points. Like – that's a weird thing to say. They were using it
anyway. It's 6 points,
right? But they were using it. The announcers were to talk about the fact that at that point Cleveland had been penalized for more than 100 yards, and I can't remember what the total got to, but it was
182.
I mean, that's ridiculous. I don't. I really think if you take the fourth quarter out of it, when things really kind of went off the rails, the game, like you said, was pretty even. And in fact, the Browns had a moment where they were only down two. They kind of got into rhythm. They scored a touchdown. Things were good. And then one play later, they give up a 75-yard run, I think, for a touchdown. That was the backbreaker, because they had finally clawed back to getting it kind of close. And then they barped it. But,
oh, so bad.
But I think this was, in a weird way, if you're going to have a game like this, I think it's good that it was game one. First of all, it was just... Mm-hmm. Game one is just a fluky game. I don't think that the Tennessee Titans are better than the Cleveland Browns. I don't think the Cleveland Browns are a terrible team. I think you were right, though. I think all the hype, I think they kind of went into this game thinking they were going to win it, and they were probably starting to kind of believe their own PR a little bit. And I think that this was a major, major wake-up call. And so that's a positive, I would say, for this game.
Yeah, I agree with that. I actually... You know, I'm not completely despondent about, like, this is how the rest of the season is going to go. I honestly don't think Baker Mayfield will let this happen. Not that, I mean, I don't, he didn't have any penalties or even delay of games. I mean, and he didn't even throw any interceptions again, I think, until the fourth quarter when things were just clearly like he was in a bad mental space. Got sacked, well, I believe, five times.
Yeah, make a bunch of stuff happen, and then they can jump all the routes because, you know. So, right. Yeah, he was in a bad spot that was not really of his own making.
But. Right. So I just don't think that I think that this is kind of like a wake-up call. I agree with everything you said. It was the first game of the season. I think they'll straighten their shit out a little bit. I'm trying to remember. Actually, I should have the schedule up in front of me. Where do they go next? Because I would much, much rather them lose in this fashion to the Titans, even though the Titans are not that great of a team, over losing the first game of the season to the Ravens or the Steelers again, you know, and that has happened so mm-hmm. many times. Like, let them get their shit together a little bit. We're heading to New York to play the Jets on Monday Night Football next week, so that'll be something.
I bet you they'll play a good game.
I hope so. And the Jets, that's an important game because the Jets was the Thursday Night Football game where Tyrod Taylor got injured last year and Baker came in, and it was the first Browns win in a season and a half or something. And so another weekday night game, Browns versus Jets, is pretty exciting to me. And I got to believe that they're going to, like, really put their heads down this week and at least make it competitive.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that you're not feeling as despondent as my brother David from the basement was, which I don't – this is a family sports radio show, so I can't read what he said. But let's just say he was emotionally despondent over the Browns. And
I was in a bad place. That was one thing that kind of surprised me yesterday that shouldn't have, which is like halfway through the Seahawks game and maybe this can transition into the Seahawks. And, you know, the Seahawks, that wasn't like necessarily a fun, dominant game to watch by any means either. And I turned to we had some folks over here watching the game with us, and I was just like, I've been looking forward to this day for so long, and I forgot how bad this day often feels. Like, it took me a long time. Like, just this vague sense of awfulness and unease that lasted after the Browns game for a long time. I'm like, God, I've been looking forward to feeling this shitty for, like, 3/4 of a year.
Well, I mean, you've been looking forward to them winning, but then, of course, the other side of that coin, which the Seahawks came very close to experiencing themselves. It was such a weird game, the Seahawks game, because I'm like, when are we going to actually just, like, when are we going to exert our dominance over the Cincinnati Bengals, who last year had literally the worst defense in the league? How are they just, like, destroying Russell Wilson? This was one of those kind of classic Russell Wilson games to me where it's like, for a good part of the game, it looks like he has no idea what he's doing, or the plays they're drawing up for him are really poorly designed. We're not blocking, you know, he's just getting his ass kicked. And then he had enough, you know, he had that one long throw DK?
Metcalf, yeah, DK Metcalf, I think.
DK Metcalf, yeah, he had that long throw to Metcalf and that long throw to Tyler Lockett. Like, he basically got it done, but man, it was not a dominant performance at all for the Seahawks. I'm going to chalk it up to first game jitters and also the fact that, you know, this is the new trend in the NFL, is that the quarterbacks mostly don't play in the preseason anymore. In fact, a lot of the important players don't play in the preseason because they're just so worried about them getting hurt. So I'm gonna chalk this up to some rust. Also, I was quietly encouraged by Chris Carson's performance. There was this one play, this critical play at the end, where Chris Carson converted a third down, which was, you know, really pivotal. Although there was a weird thing that happened after that, which was like, how did we call timeout, go have a timeout, come back from the timeout, and then get a delay of game? Like, what's going on with
you
that?
Because you can't call two timeouts in a row was conventional wisdom in our house, right?
They but called I'm saying, a timeout. How are we not able to – you just had a timeout. You figure out the play.
Right.
Go execute the play. How do you go back and not get under center and hike the ball fast enough after you've already been in a timeout? That just seems like such an accomplishable thing. And because of that, it actually created a scenario which I felt deeply uncomfortable about, where, you know, it was a long shot, but there was at least a chance that had Andy Dalton chucked another ball down to John Ross the third, we could have been in a really bad spot.
Yes, and I think, and I could be wrong, but, you know, they were taking those timeouts to bleed the clock, and you know, they had the spare timeout. So I think that could it be that Schottenheimer or Carroll or whoever's making this decision forgot about the you can't take two timeouts rule? Like, I think they were doing that just
but
to
you're
get
not
the very
bleeding the clock. right? You mean, how do you mean bleeding the clock? You mean like run it down and then call a quick timeout?
They basically saying when the clock goes down to zero, we're going to call a timeout, or like 1 second or whatever it is, call a timeout so we don't get a delay a game. That's what they had done for the first timeout. Then it seemed like they were doing that for the second timeout, but then they got to delay a game because you can't call a second timeout. But I didn't even know about the two timeout rule, although it makes sense.
Yeah, I didn't know what was going on there, but I didn't feel like we handled it well. The fact that that first down by Chris Carson, in my mind, should have salted the game away. And the fact that Andy Dalton was holding the ball at the end of the game with the possibility of chucking it downfield with all the, like, you know, all the stuff around pass interference. Now, I just felt uncomfortable with that, but it ended up sort of working out. I'm trying to think of some other. I watched the game in a very weird way, which was Carrie was working, and I was recording it, waiting for her. But by the time she got home, I was then watching it, but also fast forwarding a lot because I kept feeling my phone blow up and my watch blow up with texts from the Hawk Squad and probably from the criminals to some degree. And I just wanted to catch up so I could be part of the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I was fast forwarding through the game so much that I was kind of not really taking it in the way I normally would. So the game is a little bit of a blur for me. I'm gonna say DK Metcalf looked great. I mean, he looked like everything they're hoping he would be. Tyler Lockett still has it. Oh, man, I was mad at that Cody Barton kid. It was like, you want to get cut from this team, bro? Try, like, run into the kicker when you don't have to.
Right.
You know, to extend a drive for them. Like, that is literally the only thing you don't want. And all the talk around Cody Barton has been that he's been a real surprise in camp, and he's super smart, and he learns all the plays, and he's a heady player. And it was like, that was the dumbest move you could have pulled, man.
Yeah, I'm actually trying to – I was about to say that was a very – like, that felt like the Browns game I had just watched.
Yeah.
Like, just, like, messy and sloppy and overly aggressive. And I'm trying to think that – I would be surprised if there wasn't a running into the kicker during the Browns game, although I can't remember one. But it definitely seemed like a Browns moment.
Kicking into the runner they did a couple times.
Yes. Yeah, I'm sure they did.
So I'm going to choose to believe because I'm an eternal even though I sound all annoyed with the team or whatever, I still in my heart am an eternal optimist around them, and I'm going to choose to believe that they just had to kind of get, you know, shake the rust off. They are very lucky that they started at home against Cleveland. I don't think they win that game if they're on the road. I don't think that they would have won that game. I don't think they would have won that game if they were playing a slightly harder team. Also, it's very possible that in their mind they were like, Cincinnati is a bad team on paper, so we should be able to beat them. They may have been a little overconfident. I guess the question will be, what is it going to look like when they go play the Steelers next week? I oddly think that they'll do fine, although the Sunday night game I found to be quite dispiriting. Did you end up watching that, Patriots-Steelers?
I watched part of the first half of it because I had started Tom Brady. I actually want to talk a little bit about fantasy football, too, because it was kind of fascinating. Well, first of all, you and I are playing each other. You and I are playing each other.
I don't have a team.
Pretty dominant. And I'm glad because I actually picked my lineup myself this time, so I have like more invested in it. Not that I'm not usually invested, but anyway, so I was watching for kind of fantasy reasons and also because the Browns lost and kind of got humiliated. I really wanted to see the Steelers lose, division rivals with the Browns, and also hopefully get humiliated because the Ravens just had an amazing
day. Well, mission accomplished.
Yeah, so the Steelers got absolutely destroyed. Why do you find that dispiriting?
Because I fucking hate the Patriots. They represent everything terrible in the world, and they just got Antonio Brown, and they also won by 8,000 points. And Tom Brady looks unbeatable, and they're just the Yankees of football in my mind. So watching them win by that much when they haven't even actually put Antonio Brown into the lineup, it just feels like the Empire. It's like they're having the world's greatest cocktail party on the observatory deck of the Death Star, and everything's going great. And I just hate seeing it.
Yeah, no, I don't root for the Patriots in most situations, and I understand those feelings, but I guess I kind of forgot that, like, for me, I needed to see the Steelers lose. Like, if the Patriots are playing anybody in the AFC North, I'm, of course, rooting for the Patriots, except for the Browns, I'm rooting for the Patriots. So, yeah, I went into that with a
different
attitude.
I just have a really hard time. I just hate Tom Brady so deeply, like, because I feel like he's, I don't know, I will admit, and I was saying this to Carrie last night, a lot of this is just because the Patriots are good, and it just is frustrating because they just They seem they look like they're literally better than they've ever been before. Like at and you know, it's easy to read way too much into the first game, but I will tell you, they did not look like a team that is going to lose any games this season. And like, this is a total digression, and we can talk about fantasy here in a moment. I actually have the app up. I can get into the app now, Andrew. I'm proud to say.
Well, you. But well, okay. I have a question for you.
I was going to say, like, I had this. We did this show, Livewire show, on Friday night with Josh Gondelman, and he was a sweet guy. I really like him. I feel like he's you from Massachusetts, but he's a Pats fan, and he was writing. He had this very wonderful chapter about his grandmother and her relationship with the Pats, and her passing away, and this was all leading up to the famous Super Bowl where the Seahawks threw the interception. And he's talking about after Jerome Kearse made that catch for the Seahawks that got us down to the five. And Josh Gondelman writes in his book, he's like, and I just thought, not again. And I was like, not again what, motherfucker? Like, you guys have, along with the Steelers, the most rings in the history of the NFL. I don't hate Josh Gondelman, but I really hate the persecution complex that all sports fans, including Seahawks fans, suffer from. I hate that this is a thing in sports where everybody thinks their team can never get it right. And it's like, oh, here we go again. It's go again what? You have six Super Bowl victories. Like, the idea that, like, even Patriots fans feel like, God, we just never catch a break. It feels to me like they catch every single break that can possibly break their way. To watch Josh Gordon just tearing through people last night when he used to be a Cleveland Brown, I find just deeply frustrating, because I like Josh Gordon a lot as a person and I want him to still be a Cleveland Brown. So I just it's just the rich getting richer in a way that really bothered me. And it also made me feel like the Steelers are going to be pissed now when the Seahawks show up. It's going to be a bad game. Like, they just got whooped on national television. They are not going to they are going to, like, they're like a wounded animal right now. They're not the team we want to go play.
You want to talk about a tangent? I'm gonna piggyback on your tangent, take it someplace even stranger for this little sports conversation we're having. But that idea of the persecution complex that every fan has, no matter if they're winning. I mean, the Boston situation is kind of interesting because, you know, the Patriots weren't that great for a long time, and of course the Red Sox had the whole curse thing, and now that curse is long in the mirror, but they still sort of have that complex, even though the Red Sox are so dominant. But
everybody thinks they're the underdog somehow, which is crazy because everybody can't be the underdog.
Yeah, but it reminded me of a comment that was made on one of my favorite podcasts, Slate's Political Gab Fest. This is a while back. This is several months ago. They had on a guest, or maybe he was filling in for somebody, and I can't remember who it was, but it was a more conservative person. Usually the three people on that show lean pretty far left, with the exception of one who's like a left-leaning with some libertarian tendencies, but I'm getting into too much detail. Anyway, somebody was out and they had on a fill-in who was coming at every issue from a much more conservative standpoint, but also it seemed like a very stand-up person, a very thoughtful person. And he said, I really think that the number one problem with politics in this country right now is every side thinks they're losing. And no matter how much evidence you show to the contrary, everybody thinks they're losing, which means everybody thinks they're fighting for their kind of ideological life on everything, which makes it really, really hard to find any kind of room for compromise or people looking at each other as people, even if they have different opinions on things. And that I have been thinking about that constantly, like in my head when I'm listening to Morning Edition and getting angry and having fake fights with people I know who are conservative in my head, you know, and I'm just kind of like, how can you think you're losing when you guys control so much? And it's like everybody thinks they're losing, and that's kind of leading to some issues. So,
well, part of it is, I think you could say in sports and in politics, even if you're a Pats fan, obviously you exult in all the wins, but you also remember all the times it hasn't worked out.
Yeah.
Because you've been following it closely. And there's probably something, and I'm sure there are social scientists who have studied this, or maybe even brain doctors who have studied this, that, like, we probably remember you know, negative experiences. I can tell you that, like, the Seahawks, the interception in the Super Bowl for the Seahawks is up there in the most vivid memories in my mind of sports.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone's remembering all the bad things that happened too, and it's always going to kind of temper their experience, and even if they have six rings, they're going to think of all the times they, because most seasons, unless you're the Patriots, most seasons you don't go to the Super Bowl, you know?
Yeah, right, yeah. Or the Patriots certainly do, and of course they remember the heartbreaking losses when they actually have to.
Which are rare.
Yeah. Now, I want to go
and
back to
more
the...
more rare going forward.
The fantasy thing. You mentioned that you now have access to your fantasy app, which is good, but one thing that I was thinking about ever since we mentioned it on the show last week was you said that you couldn't draft your players because you couldn't, you know, you didn't, you had password issues and you couldn't log in, yet on the show you were able to see who your players were, and I've been thinking about that. How were you able to log in enough to see who's on your fantasy team without being able to manipulate who's on your fantasy team?
They sent me an email from Yahoo. Sent me an email that said, like, here's who you drafted. And
gotcha.
So I could see that.
Okay.
And what I had to do was I went back through the app, which I had on my phone, the fantasy app, and I just had to jump through like 9 million hoops of like, forgot my password and like reestablish and yada, yada, yada. But it appears that I am now at least on my phone in the app. I can see my players just in time for me to get my ass kicked by you, I think, because I have 84 points because my quarterback choices were Aaron Rodgers, who I have, or Mitchell Trubisky. Both of them really shat the bed. And you have Tom Brady because you have no soul and you root for the dark forces that are the possibly MAGA. No, that's not fair. Although he did have a MAGA hat in his locker. This is what I said last night on Twitter. There was a picture of Tom Brady from, like, you know how they do the little, not the intros, but there's some other part where they'll show a stat and Tom Brady standing. He's got his hand on his hip and it's like showing, you know, how good he is. And I wrote something to the effect of like, when you don't even want to get into it with this politics stuff because both sides are just going nuts or something. Like, I think what I don't like about Tom Brady, and this is a story I'm writing in my own mind, is he's the kind of guy that if you were trying to talk politics with him, he would just think both sides have really gone over the top. Like, it's like, and I'm like, I don't think that's how it works. I think one side has really violated the norms of this country, and one side is not perfect, but trying their best. I think there's something about Tom Brady's sort of just neutrality on things that makes me mad at him. But again, so much of it is about just my anger that the Patriots are so good and they've now gotten better. All of which is to say, how much are you beating me by right now? I can't see your score, but I assume you have like 300
tons. Points. If you hit the little matchup button at the bottom of the app, if you're looking at it, you'll see our side-by-sides. I got 160 points. You have 84.
You have double the points.
Can I tell you, though, like, here's the deal. So
who's your picture?
I am starting with – oh, who's my little icon, you mean? I decided my team name is Odell is Other People, and that is Sartre.
That's good. That's Sartre.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's really smart.
And of course, I'm pissed off, though, because I still, like, I only have a 20-character limit, so it's Hell is Other People without the E on the end of it. Anyway, for me, the interesting story of my fantasy team is, like I mentioned, I did the actual live draft for the first time ever, which I had a lot of insecurities about. But then once I get into it, I was having a lot of fun. I was actually sitting at Teddy's, and I had done a mock draft on my phone like 5 minutes before our draft. And so I was talking to the bartender, who's a buddy of mine, and he was kind of saying, yeah, you know, really load up on wide receivers, and that seems to have paid off. He said, you take the quarterback later, because my instinct would be take a quarterback first and build around it. But my whole thing was, let's say in round 4-ish of the draft, I finally decided it's time for me to pick a quarterback, and I did something I wouldn't usually do, which is I took a Ravens quarterback. Even though I root against the Ravens,
ooh,
I just kind of have – I just think Lamar Jackson, their new quarterback, yeah, is just fun and dynamic and interesting, and I thought that would be kind of cool. So I took him and thought of him as my starter. And then it was the very, very last round of the draft, and I mentioned this to you on the show last week. Oh, Tom Brady's still available. Well, I should probably grab a backup quarterback. There's going to be a bye week, and why not grab Brady? And then this week when I was setting up my lineup, you were so surprised to hear that Brady was the last one picked. And I'm like, yeah, why start with kind of a newbie like Lamar Jackson? He's not a rookie this year, but why start with a young kid when, you know, Brady's going to be Brady? So I start with Brady, who did well last night, as we said, against the Steelers, and got 40 points. And I'm still going to win this matchup, but it's hard to not forgive myself for
you have
not
a 99% chance,
yes,
which means there's a 1% chance I might still come back.
Because you have one wide receiver who's still on your team who could get 80 points.
By the way, I didn't even know this was possible. My defense got negative 7 points.
Yeah, that's amazing. Because you had Jacksonville.
Can it just be zero? How do you lose your defense? My defense lost me points.
Yeah, by giving up. I guess by giving up sacks. That's one way to lose points. I think when
so I need
you're
Michael
scored
Thomas
upon,
to personally. I need Michael Thomas to personally score over 80 points tonight.
That's right. Which is that's a
well. DeSean Jackson got 47 points for you.
Also on my bench, though.
Well, how could you know?
How could you know? But that's the amazing thing. So Lamar Jackson, I have on my bench, had a record-breaking day with 53 points. That's on my bench. And like you said, DeSean Jackson, on my bench, 47 points. And meanwhile, I played Tyreek Hill, who I drafted completely forgetting about what a goddamn scumbag he is. I was in the moment and I just didn't recognize the name in the moment. I was going by stats. I'm such an idiot. Like, I've been listening to some sports radio announcers who I don't think are like on the edge of progressive ideas, saying that the Chiefs should not have signed this big glossy contract with him because he's such a terrible person. I mean, these are people who both sides it in some things, and they're like, he's terrible. So Tyreek Hill, I feel good knowing I can kind of get rid of him or bench him, and I still have DeSean Jackson that I can replace him with, and I won't feel so terrible.
Always start anyone with the last name of Jackson on your team, I think, is the takeaway.
Lamar and DeSean, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you have this, like, I mean, you have players that have almost more points by themselves than my whole team.
That is true. guys are on the bench.
Lamar Jackson almost, well, he didn't, but he scored the lion's share of all the points. I have Aaron Rodgers, who I think will be better, but Aaron Rodgers is much more like, you know, he's good for 26 points or so a game typically. But Tom Brady's resting points rate is going to be like 30, it's saying on here. And it's going to go up when he gets Antonio Brown, presumably. I am so hoping. Let's talk about that for a minute, can we?
Yeah.
The whole Antonio Brown thing.
Yeah, I wanted to, yeah.
Like, because it was big news at the picnic on Saturday that not just that Antonio Brown had been cut by the Raiders, which was fairly shocking, but that he had immediately been picked up by the Patriots, which was just like, of freaking course. He was. Now, I mean, I don't dislike Antonio Brown as a person as far as I observed him on Hard Knocks. He actually seemed very likable. And John Gruden gave him a surprisingly warm send off, which I was kind of surprised by. I was like, did you hear any of Gruden's press conference?
No, I didn't. I know the broad strokes, but I didn't know that he was gracious about it because
he
had reason not to
be. Yeah, he was like, I really like the guy. He's a good guy, and I wish him the best. And I'm bummed it didn't work out. But like, Gruden really rolled with it, which I was kind of impressed by. But so he had $30 million in guaranteed money voided, and now he's going to the Patriots. And I think he signed for 5. And if he hits his bonuses, he can get up to 9. So first of all, his best case scenario, he gets $1 million less than his guaranteed money. So I don't see this as necessarily a win, other than he's going into a more successful system, of course, the Patriots. But I also think Derek Carr is a pretty good quarterback. Like, I think that I'm going to regret this prediction at the end of the year. Let's look back on it. I have a feeling Antonio Brown's not going to have a great season. I'm sure this is going to be laughable when he scores 4 touchdowns next week. But I think Antonio Brown is a cancer for whatever reason when he gets into the locker room, even though he's an outwardly nice guy. There was a guy named Ryan Clark who's played with Antonio Brown, and now he's a sports announcer. And I don't think he was just hot taking it. He said on the air, Antonio Brown is not a good person. He didn't say not a good player or overrated. He said he's not a good human, which was like, whoa. And I don't think he was just trying to get press. I think he was just being honest. And my hope is that Antonio Brown will somehow unravel. Either Antonio Brown will unravel, or the Patriots will sort of unravel. My guess is that Bill Belichick is such an iron grip on that place that it's Antonio Brown who will unravel eventually. Like, he'll just get mad and he'll quit because he can't do what he wants to do. Because there's no way Bill Belichick is putting up with that shit that he was pulling with the Raiders.
Well, yeah, but that's kind of discounting the theory that this, and maybe this is too conspiratorial for you, but that this was all in the works for a long time. And part of the reason why Antonio Brown was acting up so much was because he explicitly needed to get off of their roster so that he could go to the Patriots, because apparently the Patriots picked him up within minutes of the announcement of him, of them letting him go. And like, they kept on forgiving him for things. They kept on forgiving him. They kept on forgiving him. And then he wouldn't let it go. So he started another fight on Instagram with them. And then finally they said, fine, we're letting you go. And then the second he's gone, the Patriots are like, oh, you're available. Good. Come join us. Which means if there was some sort of collusion here with him, like this was the only way to get out of his contract so he could be with a winning team. Yes, take some financial, take a financial hit for it, but that he never wanted to be on the Raiders. Like, he pissed off the Steelers. He wanted off the Steelers. So the Steelers are like, fine, okay, fine, go to Oakland. Have fun there. And he's, ah, shit, now he's there.
But
well,
then,
how about
they
I just become
trade him to Oakland?
I don't really know the details of what that deal was like, but I guess the implication is that it wasn't his choice to go to Oakland. Oakland is where he ended up. And so he just kept on pulling these strings and just like biting the hand that fed him there until they finally released him so he could go to a team that he wanted to be on. And now, not unlike Josh Gordon, he will be a good boy who will suddenly be. I mean, Josh Gordon, like, you know, you root for him because he had addiction issues and stuff. But he also just like for years and years, like he just, we had him on our roster for, I think, a season and a half. They didn't even play because he just could not get his shit together. But then he goes over there and they turn him into a whole person again.
Well, I consider Gordon's thing almost medical, mm-hmm. you know. And so I'm very happy to see that he was able to, because when he talked about, you know, his anxiety and like the way that he used drugs and alcohol to, you know, dull his pain, you know, my heart really goes out to the guy. The Antonio Brown thing, I guess, you know what? I didn't really follow if he I could actually see that conspiracy theory having some validity if, in fact, Antonio Brown got traded from the Steelers to Oakland. I think in my mind, I thought he just went over as a free agent, which would have made the conspiracy theory make no sense, because why wouldn't he have just gone to the Patriots instead? But I wonder if it was a trade. And so this was him just trying to get out of Oakland. Although, to be honest with you, like, I guess Antonio Brown probably wants a ring, and he's much more likely to get one in New England than he would be in Oakland. But I'll tell you this. In Oakland, he would be targeted so much. He would put up some ridiculous stats, because David Carr is a good quarterback, and Oakland doesn't have much else going for it. So if it's sort of like Larry Fitzgerald in Arizona, who, by the way, you also have, and God bless Larry Fitzgerald. I love that guy is still playing. He is still putting in really like meaningful, you know, plays on the field. I mean, he was, along with Kyler Murray, helped the Cardinals win that game yesterday. But anyway, I don't know.
Can I read this to you?
I'm hoping
this is from the New York Post, but I think it's all accurate. Brown ended up with the Patriots isn't all that surprising. According to ESPN, the Patriots tried to acquire Brown from the Steelers in March, but the Steelers weren't interested in dealing the star wide receiver to their rival. So Pittsburgh traded the 31-year-old to Oakland Raiders for the third and fifth round draft picks. So the Patriots wanted Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown, I'm sure, wanted to be on the Patriots. The Steelers don't want to face him, so they send him out to the West Coast. And then what does he do? He just gets scandal after scandal after scandal and preventable stuff and fight after fight after fight. They keep forgiving him until he finally puts him in a position where they have to get rid of him.
Wow. Yeah, that's intense. Again, I'm just, because of my hatred for the Patriots, peace and love to all our listeners in the Northeast who love the Patriots. You get to love them and I get to hate them, just like you get to hate the Seahawks. But my brain is trying to spin a narrative where Antonio Brown will somehow make the Patriots worse, which is illogical, but I'm going to continue to cling to it, having to do with just like personality in the locker room. I can see a world where like if Antonio Brown, like here's the thing about Josh Gordon. I didn't get the sense that Josh Gordon was ever like, throw me the ball, you know, like Josh Gordon had issues with substance abuse, and maybe he did have some selfishness at the Browns. I didn't follow him closely enough. The issue with Antonio Brown seems to be if you don't throw him the ball every play, he's going to get mad. Mm. And like he's now in a system where they have a lot of other shit going on.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I have different feelings about Josh Gordon because he was part of like the Johnny Manziel problem too. Like those guys were just out. And again, like when you get into the substance abuse stuff, I understand that like you got to think about it in different ways. But I mean, you know, he basically gave the Browns a big Antonio Brown-esque middle finger for a long time and showed very little interest in actually making his priorities football and partying with Manziel and getting benched for the last game of the season and everything because they just didn't show up. They literally showed up on game day late. And, like, I don't know. There is a lot of selfishness there, too. So I'm a little bit less forgiving about him. But that's
from a
Browns
fair.
Perspective.
So who are the Browns playing next week? The Jets?
So the Jets on Monday Night Football, which is going to be a little bit interesting for me. My parents are in town. I'm already a little anxious about it. I mean, my dad likes to follow the Browns, but not to the not with the intensity that I do. And so I'm trying to figure out. But I think maybe what my plan will be is to maybe watch the game here at home and have snacks. Because originally I was thinking, oh, maybe my dad's always interested in this idea of the Browns bar that I go to, which I think is it would be fun for him to see. But I just don't know if my parents feel like putting up with a mob of Browns fans and, you know, having to wait a little bit longer for your Virgin Mary or whatever it is at a kind of crazy Browns bar so you can watch it live. You know what I mean? I don't know if that's their vibe.
What was the issue last time? It had to do with you didn't want to eat upstairs the last time that the watching of the Browns and the being with your family intersected.
Yeah, there was just kind of a misunderstanding of what it means to watch a football. Right. It sounds like I'm making a joke, but it really was. I was like, I was visiting my parents a few years back and I was so excited. And like, even in the plans, I was like, okay, my number one priority though is I want to watch the Browns on Sunday. Like, whatever else is fine, but like, my dad was very into it. He loves watching football too, but they have no problem watching on a time delay as well. And he's like, oh, good, I'm going to make a bunch of sausages and stuff. I'm like, yes, we'll eat sausage and watch the game. But then the game's on, and then at one point my stepmom's like, okay, the food's done. And it's like, okay, we're pausing the game and going upstairs to sit around the kitchen table to eat now. And I was just kind of like sitting there like I felt like I was in a prank show sort of. I'm like, we can't watch and eat. No, we don't want to eat in the living room and get food on the couches. I was like, so we're just the game is going on. Like, my phone is blowing up right now. We're just, like, up here just eating. Like, there isn't a football game going on downstairs. As,
So you're going to be in charge of the situation now. This might be an argument for going out somewhere just because then the food will come where it comes and the TVs will be on. Do you think – is there a universe in which they'll make you eat in your own dining room?
No, I think we're good. Okay. I just think that chances are that kind of bar – like I'm so used to going to bars and watching games. Not that my folks can't handle themselves, but I just don't think it's as comfort – you know, the games can go on. A Monday night game especially, prime time like that can go on for a good solid 3 hours. I could see you know, at least here, like Joyce is my stepmom. She can, you know, whatever, make conversation and not yell over a crowd and kind of feel stuck in a place. So originally I was like, oh, you guys can check out the Browns bar, but I'm thinking that no, probably trying to get home to watch it would be the better situation.
So are you predicting a W for the Browns?
I'm expecting a closer game. I'm not going to predict a win or a loss. I don't know why. I just don't have it in me right now. I mean, yesterday's game took a lot out of me emotionally. I'm not giving up on the team. I have some major questions about Freddie Kitchens, who, by the way, at one point has Nick Chubb, an elite running back. It's third and one, and he sets up a pass play and just pretends that Nick Chubb isn't on the team. Like, it just... I have some concerns about the leadership of this team and the play calling. Sounds like we're a little bit in Hugh Jackson territory again, where we have an offensive coordinator, but the head coach is calling all the plays. I want to see how that relationship with him and the play calling and the quarterback matures. I'm expecting the Browns to look better next week, but I think the reality of Brownsiness has hit me again, and I don't think I'm going to be going into a lot of games expecting wins unless something really changes. Oh, maybe for my own preservation.
Yeah, that must be what it is, because, I mean, on paper, this is a very good team. I mean, they got Odell Beckham Jr. They got I don't need to list the players for you, but it's like they're a good-looking squad. So logic says that they should probably win some games, but for you to not have be on an emotional roller coaster, you have to go into every game expecting the worst, basically.
I think so, yeah. And maybe I wasn't. And, well, yeah. And even yesterday, I mean, there's something about Browns-ing where it's not just a loss, right? It's somehow always humiliating or embarrassing or ugly in a way. And maybe that's kind of fan bias as well. Maybe that goes back to the complex we were talking about before. But it, like, part of me is like, it just always feels somehow different and messy and worse, as opposed to just like, I don't know, like the Seahawks Cincinnati game yesterday. Had the Seahawks not pulled it out, that would have really sucked. I think the Seahawks are better than what we saw yesterday, but it was essentially a pretty boring game with not a lot of flash and not too much aside from, you know, running into the kicker or kicking into the runner. You know, with a, aside from some frustrating moments like that, it's just, it's not like epically, it's not an epic meltdown the way the Browns somehow had an epic meltdown. It always feels epic when it's the Browns, but again, that might just be my own fan bias.
What I thought was interesting, because of, and by the way, the Seahawks were getting booed at certain points too by the home fans, so it's not like this is just unique to Cleveland, but man, the boo birds were out early in Cleveland. Like, they went up 6-0, but then as soon as things started to fall apart, like as they went into the first half, I think, or, you know, halftime, everybody was like, they were pretty mad, and I was like, oh, this is a bunch of people who've been really traumatized by this team. Like, it doesn't take very much for everyone to just slip into like, ah, here we, you know, here we go again. This is embarrassing, a factory of sadness.
Yeah, at first, I think they truly were booing the refs because some of these things were a little ticky-tacky and seemed a little one-sided as far as what they were calling. So at first, because some people were like, wow, I can't believe the Cleveland Browns fans show no class. Like, look at them booing their team so early on in the season. And people were like, no, like, then this is like from Twitter. People like, no, they're booing the refs, you dummies. But definitely at a certain point, they had to be booing the team because it was just, I mean, not, I don't know really if any of those were really bad calls. Some maybe little at the beginning of the game maybe seemed a little ticky-tacky, but I think the Browns were completely responsible for those calls against them.
Yeah, that's the other thing. The question will be, I wonder how coachable some of this stuff is, like teams that don't get penalized a lot. Is it like the coaches are like, don't hold, and then the players, when they want to hold, are like, oh, coach said I can't do that? Or is it like, because there are teams that are, you know, get penalized a lot. The Seahawks are often one of them. There are teams that don't get penalized as much. And I don't know what accounts for that. But I'm hoping that Freddie Kitchens or whoever it is his assistant coaches are can get these Browns players to not commit so many penalties because, you know, that's going to be a problem going forward.
Yeah, and apparently, I didn't know this. Apparently, the Browns had a really kind of altercation-filled preseason game with the Colts in week 3, and both coaches were addressing that. Like, I feel like you especially, I don't know why, tell me if I'm wrong about this, but when it comes to certain, like, kind of locker room culture kinds of things, I think that I listen to some of the dramas on sports radio and I buy into them a little bit more. And I think you tend to be sometimes a little bit more dismissive about whether or not like compete always is really going to inspire the players. And like, but there's no arguing that certain coaches are able to foster certain kinds of, you know, moods and I don't know, rules and personalities of teams. I mean, and you just can't, I mean, look at Belichick. Like, I don't know what it is, but when you suddenly Josh Gordon, after years and years and years of struggling with all kinds of off-field issues and on-field issues and just can't turn it around in an organization like the Browns where it's constantly adrift and coaches are changing and there's just – and has a terrible, terrible owner, the Browns do. And then he goes over to you know, New England and within a season has really seemed to turn his shit around. Like, something accounts for that. And, you know, sorry, I'm babbling here, but I thought this was really interesting. You know, it seems like so many times when players leave the Seahawks, there's like so much acrimony, right? Especially towards Pete Carroll, whether it was Earl Thomas flipping him off when he was injured.
Richard Sherman.
Like, and they're just like, they leave the team and they hate Pete Carroll, it seems like, yet there's so much kumbaya-ness when they're all on board with it. And I think it was, I can't remember, it was somebody on 710 ESPN who was saying, like, why is that? I want to say it was Danny O'Neill who was kind of raising that question. And whoever answered it said maybe that's kind of part of it, that when you're on Pete Carroll's team, it is all very personal, and so and personal in a good way. And he lets players be players, and so you feel like you have a personal connection to him, which is good when things are going good. But when things go mm-hmm. bad, then it feels like kind of it can feel like a personal affront in some way. Whereas when you have Skeletor over at the on the Patriots, and he's just all withholding and giving no love yeah. all at all, and then every now and then he almost cracks a smile at you, and you just feel like, oh my God, I love you so much, coach. I would die for you. Like, there's got to be something to those kind of cultures, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, interestingly, the part about leaving, like, nobody leaves the Patriots because the Patriots get everybody at the end of their career, it seems. I mean, that's an exaggeration, mm-hmm. but
that's interesting. Yeah.
That's an interesting theory about Pete Carroll, and I can totally see it. Like, it doesn't feel like a business when it's working. It feels like a family. And then when you're no longer, when you want more money than the team wants to pay you, or when the business, when the team's business interests start to deviate from the kind of kumbaya familyness, the business interest is what wins out. Like if you're Earl Thomas and you want a longer contract, and John Schneider has identified that you have peaked in terms of your effectiveness based on age, and he is not going to pay you a bunch of money for three, you know, for two good seasons and three more not great seasons or whatever. Like, that feels so, that just feels like such a betrayal because it was this loving family of back slapping, gum chewing, you know, this is the Seahawk way. Whereas Belichick, it's all business all the time, it would appear. And so when they're done with you, it's not like, oh my God, how could you do this to me? It's like, yeah, well, this is because it's a business. Now, the thing I'll say about Gordon is I think he's played like, this is his first game back, right? I mean, he just got cleared to play this summer.
Wait, is that true? So, I thought he didn't play any games for the Patriots last year. I didn't know. I guess I'm misremembering. I thought he did.
He got suspended. I think he signed with the Patriots, and I want to say, and then he signed with the Patriots and he played a little bit, but then he didn't finish the season. I think he maybe voluntarily stepped away, but they thought he stepped away because he was about to test positive again.
Oh, that and rings so, a vague bell.
He's been out of the mix for a long time. So, like, we'll see what happens with Josh Gordon. It'll be an interesting. Everyone keeps throwing around this Randy Moss thing, which was, you know, Randy Moss was super great with the Vikings, and then he went to the Raiders, and he didn't have a great time. And then he went and had like his third act very successfully with the Patriots. And they're saying maybe that's what'll happen to Antonio Brown. Maybe it will. I mean, I don't see how having Antonio Brown can ever make your team worse as far as on the field because he's very good. But I'm hoping that somehow, is it possible, has it ever been the case that you just have too many good players on a team? A team is so good that it actually pushes over into being bad? Maybe that'll happen.
Maybe it'll happen to my fantasy team. That was a weird little break.
I hope it happens tonight when Michael Thomas scores 90 points for the New Orleans Saints. Hey, speaking of teams that are so good they've actually become bad, the Seattle Mariners lost 21-1 to the Houston Astros.
It didn't feel like a good sports.
Is that
weekend.
Bad?
Yeah. By the way, it does look like he played 11 games for the Josh Gordon did play. He played one game with Cleveland, if this chart is correct, and then 11 games with New England last year, but then did step away near the end of the season. On December 20th, he stepped away. So we were both right. I had forgotten that he did the step away for his mental health, but I wasn't totally off base that he played a lot for New England last year.
Yeah, and I don't remember him being a huge factor, though. Like,
that's true.
He was less of a factor than we were expecting. And then also, he when he stepped away, there was must have still been some penalties happening because he had to get reinstated in the summer. So I don't know.
Gotcha.
Oh, by the way, also, Michael Bennett is a Patriot now, too, which is just
of course,
weird to see.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just weird to see. I don't know. I'll end my contribution to this by saying, if you're a Patriots fan and you're just like, F you, Burbank, I get it. Because my problem with the Patriots is largely due to them just winning all the time.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It just bothers me.
Yeah, absolutely. You had asked me, I'm still embarrassed. We had asked during our regular show, you had asked me last week why I dislike Aaron Rodgers so much. And I did not give you an articulate answer at all. And I wish we had had that conversation after watching him on the field, because I don't know if it's any more articulate, but just like when things aren't going his way, he's just got this goddamn mopey face. And he seems like the type of quarterback who will just kind of like kind of shake his head at a receiver when they don't catch something. Like, he just seems like he just thinks he's above it all, and that he's just like king of Turd Mountain.
I have a total different read on him, but that's because I think these things are probably, they're not 100% subjective in that, I mean, there are probably ways to measure it, and you could talk to people and, you know, who knows? I mean, that's a funny thing. Brady might be the world's best teammate. He probably is.
Yeah.
I assume that Tom Brady is generally probably pretty positive, but Tom Brady is, in my experience, surprisingly not well-spoken, which is funny to me because I just think, you know, he went to the University of Michigan. He's, you know, comes from, I assume, a family where reading was and literacy was prized. He used to have to do this forced, like, talk show appearance on the station in Boston. And I would hear it sometimes or hear clips from it because when he's on the radio, it's news because he's, you know, not super, doesn't do tons of interviews. And it was always like, if this guy was my friend, he would be my dumbest friend. 100%.
But if he's your teammate, he's your smartest teammate.
No, I would disagree. No? I think football players are really smart. Now, listen, Tom Brady's very smart about football, clearly, all those plays. I love football players, generally speaking, with some exceptions. But football players are, in my experience, the most cerebral players of any of the major sports. I think it's because football is so hard, like the plays are so hard.
Yeah, you got to keep so much information in your head.
Yeah, I just like them as people. I find them to be, I don't know many of them, but I just think that they're, so that's why I think there are quarterbacks out there that are, well, I don't know. I was going to say, I'm going through my head, is Russell Wilson smart to me? He seems very lovable. I don't think he's going to get into Mensa anytime soon. Derek Carr with the Raiders, not getting into Mensa. Who else? Drew Brees possibly doesn't like gay people.
Right, I think of Russell Wilson kind of as Mr. Peanut Butter. I feel like we must have said that on the show before, but Mr. Peanut Butter from BoJack Horseman. Just a really sweet, like not the dumbest guy in the world, but not the smartest guy in the world, but also really, really good intentions and just wants to make everybody happy.
That is a pretty apt description of him. I'm trying to think of who I think who is the highest profile pro football player who I think I would really get along with or who would be like fun and they would get jokes. And I'm sure there's somebody out there. And I just can't think of him off the top of my head.
Oh, man, I can't think of his name. But one of the most famous defenders, plays for Denver Broncos, has all the glasses.
Oh, Von Miller.
Von Miller. He kind of seems like,
yeah, oh, he seems fun, funny. Them. Although he did do a shark hunt that I didn't like. There's a picture of him.
Oh, really?
He caught a shark in like Miami, and that's a picture of him pulling it on the boat. But no, Von Miller seems pretty cool. Yeah, he seems like he has a good sense of humor. Honestly, I would say Aaron Rodgers. I know that that's like, you're not going to go with me on that one, but Aaron Rodgers seems pretty like, you know, he was dating Olivia Munn. She seems pretty, although now he's dating Danica Patrick, which I feel like is a much more, when he dated Olivia Munn, I thought that said something about him. Like, oh, he can hang with a person who has a great sense of humor and is very whatever. And now he's with Danica Patrick, who also is to be, you know, I guess she's to be celebrated for her accomplishments in motorsports, but now I just think of her as the person from the GoDaddy commercials.
Yeah, right.
Like, I'm like, what do you and Danica Patrick talk about? GoDaddy? Although we talk about GoDaddy a lot, you and I do. We actually make it part of the show. So
that's right. We have a listener, a GoDaddy listener, who's helped
me
out with personal issues regarding my account, which is super sweet. How old is Aaron Rodgers, by the way? I'm looking it up as I ask.
Oh, I'm
going to
say 33.
He's 35. You know, this is me. I don't know if this is going to sound inappropriate. I mean it in the most appropriate way. One thing that I kind of like is that you have Aaron Rodgers, and he's dating somebody who's age appropriate. He's 35. Danica Patrick's 37. Like, often in like kind of sports circles and stuff, you'll see guys, I think, kind of pairing up with people who are much their junior. You know, kind of an arm candy kind of situation. So I'll give him all of that is to say, like, I came back around on Aaron Rodgers today only to say that, yeah, my vitriol for him, while real, also has 100% to do with who I'm rooting for, and I think that he actually would be a fun guy probably to hang out with. He seemed, like I said on the show the other day, he seems like he's pays a lot of respect to reporters when asking when they're asking for his time and attention. And he seems like he's probably a good guy. It's like I have this sports hatred for him, not him as an actual human being, or certainly not, you know, Wisconsin or the people within.
Which is interesting because I dislike Tom Brady both as a sports person and as a human.
Yeah, I don't hate Tom Brady as much as you do.
Right. We have established that. And we've also established my hatred is way over the top. I bet if I had a flat tire, Tom Brady would pull over and need help. And I'd be like, oh, thank you. He'd be like, hey, I'm Tom. Do you need anything? And I'd be like, yeah, I need you to stop taking whatever fetal cord blood you're ingesting, which is making you get younger. I need you to stop that right now. I need you to get old. I need you to stop being good at football so that the Patriots can go into a long, protracted lull where they win like two games a season for 5 years.
And then he'll say, well, I'll just help you with the tire.
And be fine. I'll take that for now. But I want you to really think on this idea of allowing the aging process to catch up with
you.
And
he'll say, good talk.
Yeah. All right. I guess that's it for the show. Let's end it on a high note. Anything else that you wanted to say?
Not at all. I got the music queued up. I think we go out with No Matter What, right? Isn't that our
Oh, yeah. That's a good part of this.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I didn't predict.
Good,
I think
that's a good part of this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, people music. Are in it for the outro music. Oh, I forgot to say.
They can't get Badfinger anywhere else.
That's right. I just wanted to say, you predicted a Browns loss because that's how what you've got to do emotionally. I tend to go the exact opposite, and I pay the price emotionally for it. I always think the Seahawks are going to win, and so in keeping with that, I think they're going to go beat the Steelers, although I could also see them losing by a lot because I don't – I mean the Steelers, you know, the Steelers are a storied franchise, and they've been to the Super Bowl. I wouldn't say they're probably at their strongest right now, but I guess part of it is that what was seen last night was the repudiation of Juju Smith-Schuster as the Antonio Brown replacement. Like, people were like, can he carry the load? It didn't seem to work last night. But, I mean, going into New England and playing that team, I think, is a whole other thing. So he may be really good next week. Anyway, all I was going to say is I think the Seahawks are going to win or they're going to lose by 30. That is my prediction.
I just remembered something else. Are we supposed to go out? Do you remember the – I think I remember the our little outro banter here.
Yes.
You do
you want to start it and I'll do the ending?
I think that you do the starting, I do the ending.
Okay. Okay. I start things. Andrew ends them.
That's right.
Okay, cool. Well, yeah. Go Seahawks, go Browns. And please remember, no. Is it a tangent part first?
Yeah,
or is
tangents
it the fact
first, part? I think.
We're no tangent this. Too long.
And no detail too wrong. I will always be